Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again and welcome back to As It Is, the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. You can hear us 7 days a week on the radio, and you can find scripts and podcasts for all our programs with your computer by going to learningenglish.voanews.com. Today, we have some information that may save your life. How do you prepare for the unexpected? We'll tell you what the experts are saying. Then, the excitement of the World Cup hits New York City. But the people you will meet are not necessarily cheering for the U.S. team. 10 minutes a day, that's all it takes to improve your American English with As It Is. Natural disasters happen everywhere in the world. Many cause property damage and loss of life. But researchers say the severity of their effects can be reduced if people take steps to prepare. A new exhibit teaches what governments and individuals can do to lower the effects. The show is taking place at the National Building Museum here in Washington, D.C. Katie Weaver reports.
Natural disasters take place often and sometimes unexpectedly across the United States. But there is technology that can save property and lives. Chrysanthi Broikos organized the exhibit at the National Building Museum. She says large buildings and other structures can survive strong earthquakes if they are built with some level of flexibility. In other words, they need to be able to bend and move as the earth shakes.
We need to let buildings move, and we can actually understand where they might fail and then go in and design buildings with that in mind.
One building design is called a special moment frame. It enables movement at points where large load-bearing supports join each other. Rubber-based foundation blocks let buildings move, while huge shock absorbers help to limit the shaking. The museum exhibit has a model of a wind wall built at the International Hurricane Research Center in Florida. The model shows how some roofs or tops of buildings are more likely to be destroyed than others because of the strong winds of hurricanes and tornadoes. Chrysanthi Broikos says tests show that a moderately angled roof is best able to withstand windstorms.
This hipped roof shape actually withstands better than actually both a flat roof or a gable roof.
In areas with powerful winds, researchers have strongly urged the creation of at least one safe room. This is a place where building occupants can spend the most dangerous part of the storm. Another concern is how to deal with storm surges and flooding. Some coastal communities in the U.S. have made artificial reefs from oyster shells instead of rocks. The builders use shells collected from restaurants to create the barriers.
It turns out that oyster reefs actually help to attenuate wave action. They also help with soil erosion.
Chrysanthi Broikos also suggests setting aside land along the coasts for parks instead of housing. She says this is more natural and keeps valuable property away from danger. As for forest fires, researchers now suggest clearing an area about 60 meters wide around a single family house.
What that means is trying to keep that area free of material that easily combusts.
Some natural disasters cannot be prevented. But researchers say planning and timely investment can provide the same kind of protection as putting sunblock on your skin before spending the day outside the house. I'm Katie Weaver.
What the United States calls soccer, the world calls football. And there is no bigger event for football lovers than the FIFA World Cup, currently taking place in Brazil. Every 4 years, the championship series brings together football fans all over the world to cheer for their country's team. New York City is home to ethnic and immigrant communities that would love a World Cup victory for their national teams. Many football fans are cheering for their teams at restaurants around the city. Jonathan Evans has the story.
For Game 1 of the 2014 World Cup, fans of Brazil gathered to watch the action at a Brazilian restaurant in the Brooklyn area of New York. They waited with excitement for a goal against the team from Croatia. They did not have to wait long. Juliana Marcuzzi smiled as some Brazilian supporters climbed on tables to dance. She says that football is more than just a sport to people from her home country.
It's sort of a religion for Brazilians. It represents our faith in our country. Even if you have some troubles, as we are having right now, you still believe on it because it's part of you.
The next day, supporters of the team from Mexico gathered at a Mexican restaurant in Queens. Marilyn Estrada is a waitress at the restaurant. She says she was excited that Mexico had just defeated Cameroon.
I feel really, really happy because we won our first game in the FIFA World Cup, 1-0, so that's exciting. You know, it represents Mexico as a strong country. That we could win this World Cup. Yeah, we could go all the way.
Two Mexican-American friends, Pedro and Diego, talked about Mexico's victory as they rode a train a short time later. They spoke with VOA reporter Adam Phillips.
The best moment was when, we got that goal and that definite score, being that, we already had some chances and we couldn't get it in there, but we got the job done and that's what matters. Luckily, the goalie saved us because, we were about to get scored on. He flew in the air and...
You think it's going to go all the way?
Oh, yeah, of course. We're hoping for the best, but the fanatics.
One restaurant on the island of Manhattan served a crowd of mostly German football fans. They had just watched the country's national team score yet another goal against Portugal. Michael Mom, the owner of the restaurant, was born in Cologne, Germany. He was excited about the German team.
Fantastic. Actually, much better than I expected. Germany is always nervous before we start, but we are definitely a championship team. You know, we always rise to the occasion.
Nicole Veik, who was born in Berlin, also cheered on Germany. She wore a white German football jersey with a three-star design. The stars represent the three German World Cup championship wins.
We're here to get our fourth star. As a German, we are fevering for the game since forever, and so we have to watch every game, even on vacation.
There are many games left to enjoy before the FIFA World Cup 2014 ends in the middle of July. The fans of the different national teams in New York City are excited. They are so excited, in fact, that anyone who does not support one team in particular might wish them all success. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And that's As It Is. Stay with us for more Learning English programs and world news at the beginning of the hour on VOA.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. An area known as a dead zone develops every spring in the Gulf of Mexico near the mouth of the Mississippi River. It can spread as much as 13,600 square kilometers, extending all the way to the eastern Texas coast. Scientists know what causes the dead zone: too much nitrogen. But the solution might be hard to accept. Bayani Cardenas is a professor of water studies at the University of Texas at Austin. He says the movement of rivers usually removes materials like nitrates. So he wondered why that natural filtration process does not remove nitrates from the Mississippi River. Professor Cardenas says his recent study shows that more than 99% of the river's water does pass through the river's sediment, which is on the shore or bottom of the river. But he says the study found that there is so much nitrogen in the river system that it simply cannot filter all of it. The water that has nitrogen still in it supports the growth of algae. As the algae dies, it sinks to the bottom of the river, where it breaks down or decomposes. It then takes oxygen from the water. This condition is called hypoxia, and it is deadly to fish and shrimp. Where does all this nitrogen come from? The answer is farms. The Mississippi River system carries water from 33 American states and part of Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. Along the way, nitrogen and other chemicals used in farming enter the system. Farmers say these chemicals must be used to produce enough food for a growing world population. Aaron Packman is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Northwestern University. He says farmers may be able to better control the amount of nitrate fertilizer they put on their fields.
How much fertilizer do you need to give you good yields? And then how much is maybe the marginal gain from adding lots more fertilizer? So there's really a question, could you back that off and maybe get close to the same level of yield without having so much of a negative impact?
The water in the Mississippi River system should be able to clean itself naturally as it flows downstream. But flood controls and other human-made structures have hurt this filtering process. Storms in the next few months will mix the Gulf water and the dead zone will disappear. But it will return next year. And scientists say it will grow larger in years to come if something is not done to reduce the amount of nitrogen in the Mississippi River. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more agriculture stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today on the program, we explore the history of chocolate, a favorite food for many people. Researchers have known for some time that chocolate is good for the heart. We will report on a study that shows why this is so. We also tell you about the health effects of dark chocolate.
The history of chocolate begins with a plant whose scientific name, Theobroma cacao, means food of the gods. For centuries, people have been enjoying the rich flavor of chocolate, a product made from this plant. Historians believe the Mayan people of Central America first learned to farm cacao plants around 2,000 years ago. The Maya took the cacao trees from the rainforests and grew them around their homes. They cooked the cacao seeds, then crushed them into a soft paste. They mixed the paste with water and flavorful spices to make an unsweetened chocolate drink. Cacao and chocolate were an important part of Maya culture. There are often images of cacao plants on Maya buildings and art objects. Ruling families drank chocolate at ceremonies, and even poorer members of Mayan society could enjoy the drink once in a while. Historians believe that cacao seeds were also used in marriage ceremonies as a sign of the union between a husband and wife.
The Aztec culture in current-day Mexico also prized chocolate. But the cacao plant could not grow in the area where the Aztecs lived. So they traded to get cacao. They even used cacao seeds as a form of money to pay taxes or give as offerings to the gods. Only the very wealthy people in Aztec societies could afford to drink chocolate because cacao was so valuable. The Aztec ruler Montezuma was believed to have drunk 50 cups of chocolate every day. Some experts believe the word for chocolate came from the Aztec word xocolotl, which means bitter water in the Nahuatl language. Others believe the word chocolate was created by combining Mayan and Nahuatl words.
The explorer Christopher Columbus brought cacao seeds to Spain after his trip to Central America in 1502. But it was the Spanish explorer, Hernando Cortes, who understood that chocolate could be a valuable investment. In 1519, Cortes arrived in Mexico. He believed the chocolate drink would become popular with Spaniards. After the Spanish soldiers defeated the Aztec Empire, they were able to seize the supplies of cacao and send them home. Spain later began planting cacao in its colonies in the Americas in order to supply the large demand for chocolate. The wealthy people of Spain first enjoyed a sweetened version of the chocolate drink. Later, the popularity of the drink spread throughout Europe. The English, Dutch, and French began to plant cacao trees in their own colonies. Until the 18th century, only wealthy people could afford to drink chocolate. During the period known as the Industrial Revolution, new technologies helped make chocolate less costly to produce.
Farmers grow cacao trees in many countries in Africa, Central and South America. The trees grow in the shady areas of rainforests near the Earth's equator. But these trees can be difficult to grow. they require an exact amount of water, warmth, soil, and protection. After about 5 years, cacao trees start producing large fruits called pods, which grow near the trunk of the tree. The seeds inside this pod are harvested to make chocolate.
Growing cacao is very hard work for farmers. They sell their harvest on a futures market. This means that economic conditions beyond their control can affect the amount of money they will earn. Today, chocolate industry officials, activists, and scientists are working with farmers. They are trying to make sure that cacao can be grown in a way that is fair to the farmers and safe for the environment. To become chocolate, cacao seeds go through a long production process in a factory. Workers must sort, clean, and cook the seeds. Then they break off the covering of the seeds so that only the inside fruit, or nibs, remain. Workers crush the nibs into a soft substance called chocolate liqueur. This gets separated into cacao solids and a fat called cocoa butter.
Chocolate makers have their own special recipes in which they combine chocolate liqueur with exact amounts of sugar, milk, and cocoa fat. They finally crush this crumb mixture so it is smooth. The mixture then goes through two more processes before it is shaped into a mold form. Chocolate making is a big business. Each year, the market value of the cacao crop around the world is more than $5 billion. Chocolate is especially popular in Europe and the United States. Americans eat an average of more than 5 kilograms of chocolate per person every year. Specialty shops that sell costly chocolates are also very popular. Many offer chocolate lovers the chance to taste chocolates grown in different areas of the world.
Chocolate ain't your cheap apology. You ain't gonna make a fool of me. Chocolate ain't your cheap apology.
Researchers have known that chocolate, especially dark chocolate, is good for the heart. Now, they know why. Besides tasting good, researchers have found that dark chocolate protects against heart disease in two ways. It returns movement to hardening arteries. It also keeps white blood cells from gathering on blood vessel walls. Both of these conditions can lead to plaque formation. Plaque can block the flow of blood, causing heart disease. Researchers from the Netherlands reported the findings. The Dutch researchers studied 44 middle-aged men who were considered overweight. The men ate 70 grams of both dark and milk chocolate every day over two periods of 4 weeks.
The heart-healthy substance in chocolate is an organic substance called flavanol. Flavanols are also found in vegetables, fruits, and green tea. Gerald Weissman is with the FASEB Journal, which published the study findings earlier this year. He says the researchers found that there is something about the flavanols in dark chocolate that makes people like it more than milk chocolate.
And in this controlled study, the first time it's ever been done, they gave the same amount of flavanol in dark chocolate and regular chocolate. And lo and behold, the men didn't have different amounts of flavanol in their diet, but they ate more of the dark chocolate one because they liked it better.
Mr. Weissman says researchers asked the men in the study to talk about the smell and taste of dark chocolate.
So the taste component or the psychological component of dark chocolate improved, number one, the elasticity and response of the arteries to blood flow. Number two, the way that neutrophils, the white cells, stick to the lining of blood vessels. And number three, markers of inflammation.
And knowing it was good for the heart seemed to make the men feel less guilty about eating it. Researchers may someday develop a treatment that has the same health benefits as dark chocolate. But even if they do, we are sure that eating a piece of dark chocolate will still be more fun.
Dark chocolate has been shown to help prevent heart disease, but eating too much of it may cause people to gain weight. Now scientists are looking for a way to put dark chocolate's helpful ingredients, or parts, into pills. That way we can get the benefits of dark chocolate, but not the weight gain. Cacao has flavanols that may help reduce the risk of heart attack or stroke. These chemicals may lower blood pressure and cholesterol levels and improve the body's use of insulin. Insulin helps control the amount of glucose, or sugar, in the blood.
Steve Kumanelis is a chocolatier. He makes and sells chocolate treats in Washington, D.C. He says dark chocolate is an increasingly popular product.
A lot of people are gravitating towards dark chocolate because they just decide they love it, and they also have been reading all about the health benefits of dark chocolate.
But those health benefits have yet to be confirmed in studies involving large numbers of people. Also, during the manufacture of chocolate, many flavonoids are destroyed, while sugar and fats are added to make the chocolate taste better.
Scientists want to learn the benefits of flavanols before they are changed in the manufacturing process. They have announced plans for a 4-year-long study of 18,000 adults. The subjects will take small amounts of pure cacao flavanols. The study is believed to be the largest of its kind. Joanne Manson works at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. She is the lead researcher in the study.
This capsule of cocoa flavanols will avoid having the calories and the sugar and the saturated fat found in chocolate.
And the flavanols will not have any taste.
The subjects in the new study are to be separated into two groups. Members of one group will take pills containing flavanols. The other group will take placebo pills, substances that do not have anything in them, other than, perhaps, sugar. Whatever the result of the study, chocolatier Steve Kumanelis is not worried about his business.
People like the experience of actually biting into a piece of chocolate, whatever their favorites are.
The flavanol benefits test is just starting. For now, people will have to get their flavanols the tasty way by eating dark chocolate.
This Science in the News was written by Dana DeMage and Christopher Cruz, who also produced the program. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.